Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. This is Way of the Dreamer. This is a place where we celebrate the power of dreams and coincidence and imagination, things that are often undervalued, just in our culture, but can be the source of creativity, guidance, help us to do better in this world and have access to other worlds. Learn from, apply the gifts of dreams, coincidence, and imagination. I'm calling today's show Reclaiming Dreamtime Wisdom. And I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to make it an informal lecture. I want to talk about what traditional dreaming peoples have understood that we might need to bring back. I'm going to talk about why most cultures, across most of human history, have thought that dreaming was a good idea and respected and valued the gifts of people who are good at doing it, good at doing this dreaming. I'll tell some personal stories about how I became so involved in the matter of dreams and started pursuing a path for which there was no career track in this culture, the path of a dream teacher. And I'll not only talk about some core techniques and insights of the approach to shamanic dreaming that I call active dreaming, I'll introduce a few new twists that have come to me in recent months and years. I like new games. I've been developing some new journeys. I have a few new ways of talking and thinking about dreams that I haven't said much, if anything, about in the series. So those are some of the places we're going to go. And before we do any of that, I'll just give you a few quotes from Mr. Jung, because I was looking over some notes from Mr. Jung for something I'm writing. Jung was a shaman of the West, you know. He paid the price, that harrowing, terrifying underworld journey, and he knew some things in the way of a shaman. He knew that a woman who was in trouble needed to hear a certain lullaby, and he just started humming it there in his consulting room, in the way that he observed how the land is speaking, how the flying beetle is speaking, evoking the scarab of Egypt, how the spectral fox on the path in the woods is commenting on someone's situation, how the fish are leaping or not in the lake. He was looking at the world with the eyes of a dreamer, the way that indigenous people do. There's been a very unpleasant discussion for some years about whether Jung was a racist because he used words like primitive and archaic and sometimes seemed to equate people of color with primitive people and so on. He was a man of his time. No doubt he was edged with the racism, the effortless racism of a European in his age. But he actually had great sympathy and interest in so-called archaic, or we might say indigenous ways of understanding dreaming in the dream time. He sought out books on the Australian dream time, for example, by Spencer and Gillen, other early anthropologists, and wanted to understand what the first peoples of my native country meant when they talked about the dream time. He was really, really interested when he heard, I think from Marie-Louise von Franz, about the practices of an indigenous dreaming people of hunters and fishers in Labrador, in the Labrador Peninsula, in the northeast of North America. I think she's got her information from Frank Speck, a very colorful anthropologist of the early 20th century, who lived with the Naskapi. And what Jung took away from this was the idea that here was an indigenous people who, it seemed, did not have gods or daimons, or even much in the way of ritual or religion, as other peoples might understand it, but they had the idea that in each human individual, there is something that they call the great man, a central self, a higher self, who was the one who delivered dreams. And if you paid attention to the dreams, you'd get better dreams and more helpful dreams. And if you didn't pay attention to your dreams, the big man, the great man, would get mad at you and might send you ruinous dreams and might abandon you altogether. This was the idea that he picked up, and he wrote about it. Well, he actually dictated about it. Picture him in his 80s, sitting with his assistant Aniela Yaffe, dictating the text that became Memory Streams Reflections, the most accessible of his books. Well, recently, within the last year, we have the missing bits. We have the parts of Memory Streams Reflections that didn't make it into the published edition. We have a new collection of the unpublished cuts and interviews. And it's in those that you'll find, for example, Jung talking about this people in Labrador who understood the great man as a central personality, as a central self. Of course, he recognized something in this of his own theories of individuation and the need to ascend towards a self on a higher level. So what I was looking at just now were some quotes that I excerpted from the Red Book. If you're going to read it, some of you have, don't read it all at once. Please, please do not try to read it all at once. It's not possible. He does go insane. By his own account, he goes insane. He comes back, but he does go insane. And it's impossible to read it page by page without going a bit crazy yourself. But he said some very important things in it, and he said them sometimes beautifully, and he illustrated it beautifully. And here are a couple of the things that he said in the Red Book. Listen to this. The spirit of the depth taught me to consider my action and my decision as dependent on dreams. Dreams pave the way for life, and they determine you without you understanding their language. So he's saying something beyond the idea that dreams might give us guidance or direction, dreams might give us messages. Think whether or not we get a message, whether or not we understand that there's a message, maybe. Whether or not we're fully conscious that we are dreaming, what happens in dreaming paves the way for life. It prepares the actions and decisions that we take, whether or not we understand the connection, the causal process involved. Then he asks this. It's a question for any of us who are interested in understanding and acting on dreams for ourselves or others. Jung says this. Who can teach and learn the language of dreams? Scholarliness alone, I think he's a great scholar, but scholarliness alone is not enough. There's a knowledge of the heart that gives deeper insight. A knowledge of the heart is no book that grows out of you, like the green seed from the dark earth. So that's where we have to look to understand our dreams. You have to go to the heart, and have to go to the heart of the matter, the core of the matter. And who can learn and teach this language of dreams? Jung had no doubt that the people we want to trust about dreams are those who dream a lot, those who keep records, those who work with them. He said once, dreams are facts from which we must proceed. While Freud maintained that dream content was a deception, a veil for things that are hidden or suppressed, usually sexual desires, Jung was firm, at least after they broke up, that dreams are not trying to hide. They're trying to deliver their messages as clearly as possible. The dream source, which he called the spirit of the depths in a passage I just quoted, speaks in symbolic language, certainly, because symbols take us from what we know or things we think we know to what we do not yet know. Symbols, he wrote once beautifully, are bridges thrown out towards an unknown shore. Well, I'm not a Jungian, and guess what? Jung wasn't either. He said that to Lawrence van der Post, who quoted him in his simple biography of Jung. He said it to a number of people. I'm not a Jungian. I'm not a Jungian either. I'm a friend of Jung. I've read as much of Jung starting in high school as I've been able to get access to, and all this posthumous stuff, like the text I just referred to, edited by Sonu Shamdasani, who gave us the Red Book, keeps coming out, keeps coming out, keeps coming out. No, I'm a dreamer who was self-manufactured, or shall we say manufactured by what engaged his self. I had a head start because I had a very difficult childhood. Some of you know about that. I was pronounced clinically dead in a hospital aged 3 years old. And then when I came back, the doctor said, perhaps with some embarrassment, oh, your boy died and you came back, didn't he? Well, that sort of set me apart. I was very ill for the next 8 years. I had double pneumonia 12 times. Well, 12 times including the bout that killed me, that technically killed me. if I didn't want to stay in the body much, and I don't really remember anything from what happened when I left my body at age 3 and was pronounced dead. I just know I felt like a stranger in a strange land afterwards. But I did dream, and then at age 9, under a surgeon's knife for an emergency appendectomy, I died again and was pronounced clinically dead again, and this time I came back remembering a whole life that seemed to be lived amongst a beautiful, very tall, very elongated, very pale people. And when I tried to talk about this life, lived somewhere else in a few minutes of TikTok time up top, adults couldn't hear me. It must be the hallucination because of the medication, one of the doctors said. My parents couldn't bear it. They couldn't understand it, had no way of appraising it. The first person I could talk to about that kind of thing was an Aboriginal kid, someone of the First Peoples. And he said, matter of fact, oh, yeah, we do that. We get very sick. We go and live with the spirits. And when we come back, sometimes we're the same. Sometimes we're completely different. He said, my uncle, the artist, he goes down there, goes to those people when he wants to get the idea for the good paintings, the ones that are not for the tourists. And he comes back. So I knew because of that and because of other experiences as a kid that there are worlds beyond the physical and they're real. This is the common dreamtime understanding of our early ancestors and of indigenous peoples who kept the dreaming traditions alive. The dream world is a real world. It is not less real than the ordinary world. It might be more real. It might be the origin of events and situations that come about in the surface world, in waking life. That's what Jung seems to be saying in a passage I quoted from the Red Book. The Pintupi, the Aboriginal people of the Western Desert, say, from dreaming it becomes real. From the real world of dreams, things manifest in the surface world, the real world of ordinary reality. It's in dreaming that it begins. It's in dreaming that manifestation begins. So I've known, as I say, since my boyhood, because I used to go there and I came back, not only in extremity of the near-death experience, as we learned to call it, but in gentler ways. I learned to come and go out of the body. I understood that dreaming might be an experience beyond the body, whether or not you want to see it that way. So I understood as a kid something else that is central to the dreamtime understanding, to our ancestors' early understanding of what dreaming is. Our early ancestors, maybe all of them in all traditions, understood that dreaming might be traveling. Your dreams, in your dreams, you make visits and you receive visitations. When in midlife, I was called by an ancient woman, an Arundiwano, a woman of power of Iroquoian tradition, who talked to me in her own language and told me things she wanted me to know and sought information from me from her future. When I started having those encounters with the woman I call Island Woman in my books, I talked about them to an elder of the Haudenosaunee, the Six Nations of the Iroquois, of whom the Mohawk are one. And he said to me, very matter-of-factly, oh, yeah, we do that. And you make some visits, and you receive some visitations, just like that. Just like, oh, that's what explains it. That's what it's about. Western psychology really hasn't caught up with this. We have all sorts of theories and analytical approaches. But the simple understanding that dreams might be visits or visitations, in which you go somewhere, you meet people somewhere other than your ordinary scene in your bedroom, or people from somewhere else come visiting you, and they might include persons other than human. This is not really favored, despite Jung's interest in such concepts in Western psychology. It does engage the interest of ordinary dreamers, though, because ordinary people have experiences that fit those descriptions. I mean, they know that, okay, I was in that interesting place, and it seems that I was really there, and then, oh, goodness, next week or next year I find myself there in waking life, or I find myself in that place where my dead are alive, and I'm at some kind of family reunion, and maybe I've been told not to eat with the dead, but maybe I do, and it's okay, and I come back, or still on that track. You know, my beloved granny came to see me last night, and she turned up, and we were talking, and I feel it was her. No, I don't just think she's a sketch. I don't just think she's an aspect of me. I think Gretna came around, and I'd like to know why, and I'd like to have a further conversation with her. So ordinary people, you know, still dream the old ways. And as I look over history, I mean, I started out in terms of my career, in terms of jobs that paid me. I started out as a book reviewer for newspapers, actually, but then my first full-time job was as a junior professor in ancient history at the Australian National University. And I was called to it because of my dreams, of course. I used to dream in funny languages. I'd dream in classical Greek. My Greek never got to be very good in ordinary reality, but I'd still have to grab a dictionary and figure out what was being said to me in my dreams. When I look over the whole sweep of history, I find three dominant reasons why most cultures that had some idea of what they were doing valued dreams and dreamers. The first is that most human societies at any level of evolution have understood that dreaming is a way of connecting and interacting with powers beyond the ordinary, with deeper sources of knowledge. For some, those are gods or goddesses or daemons or demons or in between people who might be of ambiguous character, like the jinn or like the fairies, who might be ambiguous and might be tricky for humans to deal with. They might be nature spirits. They might be the ancestors and the wise ancestors. Those who have some reason to look over us and to look out for us might be amongst the most practical, most gifted, most effective advisors we have available. So there's been that idea that in dreams we have access to wiser sources, wiser intelligence than the everyday mind. And the most important of those sources might, of course, be the higher self, the self on a higher level. The philosopher Plotinus certainly thought that. I think Jung came around to that idea too. It might be that the fundamental life teacher is no stranger, but the self on a higher level. And as we rise to consciousness, maybe we are able to integrate into our present mind and our present situation, and our present body, a little more of a self on a higher level and rise together, ascend together towards the self on a higher level still. Anyway, in practical terms, any day, any night, dreaming might be the easiest way to keep in touch with these sources of greater wisdom, which is why many cultures have taught that if you've lost your dreams, you've lost something vital, you've lost your connection with the sacred. It might be even more serious than that. You might have lost your connection with your patron, deity, with your personal god, the Mesopotamians would say, with your great man, the people of the Labrador Peninsula might say. You might actually have lost a vital part of your soul, part of your being. So look out. Don't let your dreams go, and if they've gone, find out how to bring them back. That's one of the things that I'm engaged in every day, helping people bring back their dreams and with that more of their soul. Back to the main threads of this part of the talk. The second main reason why most human cultures value dreams and dreamers is they have understood that dreaming is part of our preparation for the future. We see things of the future in dreams, and we not only see things that will happen. This is precognition. It could go on in waking life. It goes on routinely, I would say, in dreams, except most of us miss it, just don't recognize it. Or if we have the feeling that a dream might be about the future, we misapply it. We think, okay, it's about something that happens tomorrow. In fact, it's about something that will happen in 3 weeks. We think it's about so-and-so, but actually so-and-so was a misidentified person. Got someone resembling so-and-so. So it mixes up the messages, but nonetheless, if you keep a journal over time and pay attention to what follows your dreams, you will sooner or later have first-hand evidence, if you don't have it already, that you do see things before they happen. And once you've woken up to that, and that becomes part of your basic understanding, you're ready for the interesting stuff. You're ready to look at whether your dreams are actually giving you an early warning of something that you might want to prepare for, avoid if you can, aim and shape for the better, or whether your dreams might be an early opportunity alert. Hey, look out for this. Here's something desirable, desirable event or outcome that you could help to manifest if you take appropriate action in accordance with the dream. And then thirdly, just to cover the main lines for now, the third reason why so many cultures had value dreams and dreamers before we really lost it in our Western society is they've understood that dreaming has something to do with healing and with medicine. They've understood that one of the things going on in dreams is that we do get a readout on our health condition, health of body, mind, spirit, emotions, all of that. You know, we have a dream doctor who turns up and doesn't charge a cent, will give us a report sometimes in symbolic language, sometimes in medical terminology, sometimes in quite accurate anatomical imagery. Will give us a look at what's going on in the body. Of course, our dreams will also give us a picture of our adjustment or maladjustment in terms of our emotional health. Dreams will also show us something about the state of our soul. I mean, you dream of a younger person who turns about to be a version of yourself. Maybe that's plucking at you to go connect again with that younger person and what they were doing at that stage in life and make a pact together and maybe bring back some energy and imagination from them. You've lost your dreams? Well, that is the number one symptom of what shamanic types call soul loss. You know, the world gets cold or cruel. Part of you goes away. It doesn't want to be around. You've got a hole in yourself, and that hole might have been occasioned by the absence, the checking out of the beautiful, bright dreamer in you, which is why you don't get your dreams anymore. When we come back, we'll talk about how you can bring back aspects of yourself, like that bright dreamer, back into your life to live a richer, juicier, more whole and more healthy life. You're listening to Robert Moss. We're talking about bringing back the gifts of the dream time. We'll be back with Way of the Dreamer after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss, and we're talking about bringing back the gifts of Dreamtime. Dreamtime is a term that was developed by anthropologists in Australia based upon the stories they were hearing from the First Peoples, the Aborigines. It doesn't have an exact translation in Aboriginal language, but Aborigines don't reject it. They have other names for the Dreamtime that are more close to a literal translation. One of them is the every when. I rather like that. You're outside time. You're every when. You're in a realm outside TikTok time, a realm from which things manifest, a realm in which contact with the ancestors who dreamed the world into being, walking around naming things as they named things they came into the world. There's some lovely primal mythology here and some lovely primal cosmogony, I mean, accounts of how things come into manifestation. From the dream time, from the dreaming, it becomes real in the sense of taking its place in the surface world. Well, many people, you know, who hear me talking about dreaming have a basic question. Okay, this is all very well, but I don't remember my dreams, or maybe I used to remember my dreams. I've been in a dream drought for 6 months or 30 years. What do I do about that? And I give them some very simple suggestions. One of them is this. Be kind to fragments. I mean, you say you've got nothing, but you've probably got a little something. It might be terribly wispy. It might be a snatch of a song. It might be a sense of a color. It might be a blob. I once had a woman who was getting very angry at a retreat because she didn't have dreams and others did. All she had when I pressed her was a blob, a red blob. But as we explored the red blob of oil paint, it turned out suddenly she's back in her mother's art studio at age 9, and suddenly a whole scenario is opening up and coming alive, and suddenly she's able to connect with her 9-year-old self, a 9-year-old self who'd gone missing from her life, and be able to, little by little, bring her back. So be kind of fragments. You know, remember, sit yourself juicy and tense as any night you can. Try to wake up in an unhurried way. Try not to wake up with the alarm clock, and try to wake up in a drifty way. See if you can linger close to the dream and the half-dream state. See, this half-dream state between sleep and awake, particularly in the morning, particularly around dawn, let's say, is such a fertile creative space. It's prime time for psychic connection with other minds. Prime time for an encounter with an inner or transpersonal guide. Prime time for being able effortlessly to scan your environment psychically in terms of things that might open up during the day or the week and in other ways. It's also a good time to bring back or stay close to a dream from which you just emerged, which is still around you to such an extent that if you give it a go, you might be able to go on with the dream, dream it forward into new scenes, into new chapters, if you like, and resolve something or simply enjoy it more. So give yourself a juicy intention and be ready to record something. I mean, the art of keeping a journal is a simple and vital one in life. It's not just about recording dreams. So that is the first thing I do when I have a dream report, which is most mornings, most middle of the nights too. But whether or not I've got a dream report, I'm going to write in my journal something each day, something I'm thinking about, something I observed, a miniature book report, something of that kind. I mean, a dream book is where you make space for your dialogues with yourself or your soul. And when you're keeping a journal, you're saying to your dream producers, this is another way of looking at dreams, so we might have producers, you're saying to your dream producers, here I am, I'm ready to record, give me something. You're making yourself more interesting. That's something I throw at people when they ask me, how can I remember my dreams? I say, how about looking at it like this? How can I make my dreams more interested in remembering me? I'll say it again because it really stands things on their head, doesn't it? How can I make my dreams more interested in remembering me? I'm talking in the way of indigenous people as if a dream or story has its own life. Actually, sometimes we feel that they do. Sometimes we do feel the dream or story has its own life. It will come or go at its own will, at its own will. Well, if I'm not doing anything with dreams, if I don't talk about them, if I don't share them, if I don't write them down, if I don't act upon them, our dreams or the sources of our dreams might get fed up. They might say, well, you're not doing anything with us. Why should we give you anything? Why don't we just go away and find someone else who's more receptive? Go and do our own thing. Dreams require action. They require more than analysis. They require action. Dreams require more than interpretation. Instead of just asking, what does a dream mean, which is another popular question, we might want to ask, where is this dream inviting me to go? Is the dream inviting me to return to the place where the dream action was unfolding, which is one of the core techniques that I teach? I call it dream reentry. You're somewhere in your dream. You're in that house, in that city, in that beach, in that planet, in that other planet, in that place where the dead are alive, in that marvelous school with wise teachers, in that adventure playground, on that tropical atoll with your perfect lover. You're somewhere in your dream. Maybe you can go there again, re-enter the dream, go there, spend time there in a state of lucid dreaming. I teach you how to do that. Sometimes it helps to use shamanic drumming. Sometimes self-suggestion and setting a clear intention and following an energy and a direction the dream has given you is enough. But that might be one way of responding to the thought that dreams are inviting us to go somewhere. But dreams, of course, are inviting us to do things in this world, too, to do things with the body, in the body, go to that place, to do that research, go shamanic shopping and buy clothes in the color you were wearing last night that you don't ordinarily wear and see how that works out, to make poetry, to make art, to make collage, if you're other people, to make theater. So where is the dream inviting you to go? I mean, I'm a bookish character who loves research. I just love plunging into the odd lines of research that my dreams often give me. We have signature styles of dreaming, and for me, one of my dream signatures is not only am I often reading or editing or writing in my dreams, but often I come back with a phrase in a language that I either don't know or know only very slightly, or even if it seems to be English, is a very obscure word that is not part of my ordinary vocabulary. So I have a mystery word or words to research immediately, and I love hunting these mystery words for my dreams. Great game in the morning sometimes. I'll ask other people to help me. Because that's one of the other things we need to learn to do with dreams. We need to learn to talk about them to other people, really talk about them, in a way that is entertaining, it's fast and it's fun, it raises energy, and it leads to action, action to embody the creative and the healing juice of a dream. Again, we must go beyond analysis. Understanding dreams is not simply about interpretation. Yes, some kind of interpretation might be required, and someone else might offer us some feedback, which is very helpful. We don't want to let them tell us what our dreams mean, though. We want them to speak to us by an agreed protocol. I teach people to talk to each other like this. If you have a thought for me on my dream or my life, try expressing it like this. If it were my dream, I'd think about such and such. You can then say anything you like as long as you're polite, because you're making it clear you're not trying to lay down the law to me. To be an expert on my dream, I'm the only expert on my dream, and you are the only expert in the last analysis on your own dream. No, but you can bring in associations, projections from your life, and that might be very interesting. My dream makes you think of a dream of your own or an episode from your life. Tell it. It might be our way of understanding each other. So just to bring this to temporary closure, one of the primary things we need to do to get our dreams back, to remember our dreams again, is we need to learn to talk about them to each other in a way that is fast and fun, satisfying, enables us to offer each other feedback in the right way and leads to action. I'll explain what that means after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. I guess in the midst of this talk, I'm giving you a little bit of the potted history of my school of active dreaming. I called my overall approach active dreaming because I wanted to be provocative. People who think about dreams usually think of dreaming as a passive experience. I lay down, I fell asleep, I had a dream, or a dream had me. I wanted to say we can be active about dreaming in several senses. First of all, we can learn to go consciously, lucidly into the dream space and do things with a certain intention. And there are several ways we can do that. If we can learn to spend time in the place between sleep and awake, as Tinkerbell called it, in that half-dream state of hypnagogia, we can take off on lucid dream adventures, just like that, with or without a destination in mind. If we can learn to take an image from a dream and travel through it, perhaps with shamanic drumming, make a journey through an image from our dream life, with a question in mind, an intention for exploration, we're embarking on lucid shamanic dreaming, a lucid shamanic dream journey. We can, of course, try all the mnemonics suggested by the different approaches to lucid dreaming to wake ourselves up to the fact that you're dreaming inside a sleep dream. Look at your hands, the dead or alive. Can you read or not? Oh, that's all very well if it works for you. I've never actually found that any of that is particularly useful or important. I found that the most important things are what I just mentioned already. To be able to maintain a state of relaxed attention or attentive relaxation around sleep, before, after, or in the pause between different phases of sleep, and the ability to take a personal image and travel through it again, use it as the doorway for an adventure in lucid dreaming. Of course, there are all sorts of other things you can do once you get good at this. You can set up a rendezvous, you can make dates with other people to meet in a mutual dream experience, mutual lucid dreaming, astral projection, if you like. What's astral projection got to do with this? Well, you know, it's no secret to dreaming traditions, not just esoteric practitioners, but the typical dreamer in any society that values dreaming, and actually to many ordinary dreamers in any walk of life today, one of the things that goes on in dreams is some part of you leaves the body. Your body's dormant in the bed, some part of you is traveling. Often it's traveling not as a disembodied thought form, it's traveling in a subtle vehicle or subtle body that can experience pleasure and pain. Sometimes it seems more intense to the physical body and can return to the physical and leave marks, literally leave marks, based upon its experiences during the astral excursion. And this is what goes on. It's probably what goes on in the life of anybody, regardless of their attitude towards these things and regardless of their understanding. It, like anything else, it can be built into a practice. But I promised to talk about how we talk about these things. Probably the most important simple technique that I've invented in all my years of public teaching dreaming, dream work, active dreaming, somatic dreaming. Probably the most important simple technique I've invented and offered to the world is called the lightning dream work game or the lightning dream work process. I named it lightning because I wanted to get the idea that this could be done fast, to concentrate this energy, pow, like a lightning bolt. It's a way of sharing a dream, or in fact it works for any personal story, which has four steps. The dreamer, the one telling the story, is going to give a very simple narrative with a title. The guide, the help of the friend, is going to help the dreamer shape what they're saying so it's a story that is told simply and well so that others want to hear it. What a gift this is to be helped and supported in learning to tell your story more simply and better. Give it a title. That's step one, story plus title. Step two, if you're the friend or helper, is you're going to ask three basic questions. How did the dreamer feel coming out of the dream? How does the dreamer feel around it? Feelings, feelings, feelings. Feelings around the experience are actually a better guide to what to do about it than feelings inside. First, feelings coming out of a dream will tell you if it's urgent or not, negative or positive, how personal it is, and so on. Second question, reality check. What does the dreamer recognize from this in the rest of their life? And also, could any part of it play out in the future? Once again, we don't want to miss the possibility that the dreamer is giving life-supporting information about events that lie in the future
in waking life. Third question. What's the question about the dream, or if you like, where is the dream inviting you to go? Step three. When you offer feedback, you do it the correct way. You say, if it were my dream, and then you say anything you like. There are many, many different ways of getting at what's going on in a dream. There are many theories. There are many approaches. You have your own experience is going to be the most important guide. Doesn't matter whether you're a Freudian, a Jungian, or a Wattsian, or a whatever-sian. If you say, if it were my dream, you can say anything you like, and what you say might be very helpful. You're a million miles away from the dreamer's sense of what the dream means. You can help them by indirection, because your remark is so far away from where they think the dream is taking them. You help them to home into where they need to go. And then the final step is the action plan. Dreams, once again, require action. What are you going to do? What is the dreamer going to do to celebrate, honor, embody, act upon this experience? You know, you're going to do something creative. You're going to do some research. You're going to tell somebody else, share the information with another person. At the very least, you're going to journal it. And then for temporary closure, in your own journal, or if you're talking to someone else, you can come up with a bumper sticker, what Mark Twain would call a snapper or an astonisher, a one-liner of some kind that crystallizes, enables you to carry forward some insights from the dream or from the conversation about the dream if you've been sharing with a friend in the way that I've suggested. I've written these techniques with many examples of how they work in a number of my books, probably for the Lightning Dreamwork. Probably the best to go to would be my book, Active Dreaming, or my book, The Three Only Things. The Three Only Things, actually, was generated by my first broadcast for Healthy Life. So I did an early show years and years and years ago, in which I played with the phrase, The Three Only Things, to describe three things, three areas of life, three areas of practice that we tend to dismiss or whose importance we tend to shrug off. Dreams, coincidence, imaginations, only a dream. It's only coincidence, only imagination. Having talked about that, perhaps in a show which I flew solo as I'm doing here, I'm so pleased with how shapely it seemed to be, how well it came together, that I had occasion to talk to a publisher about it. And a day after that, I had a contract, and I guess within the year after that, we had the book The Three Only Things, which is probably one of the very best of my books, for people who are new to this, with lots of good stories, lots and lots of stories, and lots of simple techniques that people can apply. The three only things, tapping the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination. So you have a feel for what all of this is about. This is not a new age approach at all. It's a very old age approach. It's, in fact, a Paleolithic approach. Some of the things I'm saying go back to the most ancient understanding we can trace of what? Of what dream, what's going on with dreams and what's going on with soul. So the history of dreaming is also the history of soul. There are reasons to believe, as the great Victorian anthropologist said, that the origin of the human belief, in which is near universal, has been near universal, that we have a soul as well as a body, maybe more than one aspect of ourselves more than the body. We have a soul more beyond the body, which can travel beyond the body and is therefore likely to survive physical death. This becomes the origin of mythologies and religions. There's reason to believe that this belief grew out of the experience of what happens in dreams, when people become aware that they leave the body and they return. They're visited by others traveling in the same way. So it's all about soul. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
It's all about soul. That's what we've been talking about. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. You've heard people say dreams are the language of the soul, certainly. But they're also experiences of the soul. Of course, we have a hard time nailing down any kind of working definition of soul. We look at the words for soul in different languages. Sometimes we get confused. Sometimes it seems to be the same as a word for breath, something that blows in and out of the body. In Greek, it's very nice, psyche or psyche. Is also a butterfly. That's very nice to think of some connection between soul and butterfly. And some of us who've done shamanic work have sometimes had the pleasure and the privilege of seeing someone's winged soul traveling beyond the body, looking like a butterfly or a firefly, something like that, as it comes and goes. Dreams are events in the life of the soul. And in indigenous traditions and in some great civilizations too. I mean, you go to China and you find in Imperial China you find records of the lives of great officials in which dreams are painted. They have these visual painted biographies. Hai Mukti Mas in Imperial China, they have these visual biographies. These great painters would be commissioned to paint scenes, important scenes from the life of the high official. And in some of these visual biographies, three or four out of, let's say, 20 paintings are of dreams. Dreams are recognized as major events equal to daytime events in the life of the official. So what I'm talking about is not only characteristic of indigenous societies, it's also been a feature of life and understanding of what life is about in some, let's say, high civilizations, highly literate, highly cultured civilization, that dreams are part of your biography, a part of your autobiography. There might be a central part. Of course, Mr. Jung understood that very well. His autobiography, mostly dictated, therefore, not exactly an autobiography he wrote out by hand. But memories, dreams, reflections is more than anything else a record of his dream and vision experiences. Yes, it has scenes from his waking life, but most of it is a record of the life that he lived in dreams and visions. My own book, The Boy Who Died and Came Back, is very much like that. Not a Jungian book, but my own record of a life that turns on dreams and visions. And if you are up for even more than that, you might at some point check out my book, Mysterious Realities, subtitled Tales of a Dream Traveler from the Imaginal Realm, which has some strange stories of travels in different worlds with interesting encounters with beings who might appear as a daimon or a goddess or a personified death himself. So I'm talking about fields of adventure, fields of discovery, and places available to the lucid dreamer, the conscious dreamer, the shamans, mystics, and creators have always wanted to go to. I'm talking to you about the facts that closer to you than you may realize, there are realms, there are worlds where there are wise teachers waiting to remind you about the purpose of your life, the purpose of your soul, and to show you the largest nature of reality in the multiverse. I mean, they're right there. So your dreams, if you'll only spend more time with them,
and become more conscious of what you could do inside them, are a launch pad for destination travel to worlds of wonder. But then more than that, dreams are also a way of bringing gifts from another world into this one. It works both ways. In dreams, we get out there. We encounter beings in other realities. We have adventures. We can accomplish healing. We can go through initiation and transformation. But the traffic flows both ways. So dreaming might also be a conduit for gifts from a deeper world to reach you in this one and be applied in everyday life. And that fits the definition of real magic in my mind. Real magic in my mind is what happens when we bring the gifts of another world into this one. And this happens through dream work, when we are able to catch the dream, look at it, and figure out how to apply what it is telling us or giving us in ways that help us to survive and thrive in our world and help others, because dreaming is not only for the individual, it's for the community. Heraclitus famously said that in dreams we enter a world of our own. Well, that is true to a certain extent, and yet not altogether true. Ancient and indigenous peoples understand that dreaming is also social in a number of senses. Yes, it might seem to be deeply personal, but you know what? In dreams we get out and about, some of us, including myself, are far, 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 far more social in dreams than in a regular life. I'm with other people in my dreams every night in a way that I've never been in ordinary life. And I teach even more than I've ever done in everyday life. Every night, it seems, I am leading workshops, giving lectures, attending conferences, socializing with people at different locations, most of which lie in alternate reality. They lie in a parallel world to this one. In the old days, when I was getting out around the world many, many times a year, many of these dreams turned out to be precognitive or previews of situations where I'd be in person with certain groups, you know, in Prague, in Barcelona, in Seattle, and other places. Today, they're typically laid out in a separate reality. So we get social in that sense. We meet other people. Our interactions with them have consequences in the world of the dream, and sometimes it spills back into the world of physical life. But dreaming can also be social, as I tried to demonstrate, or at least explain, in the sense that we can carry our dreams to other people. We can learn to talk about them to other people in a way that is mutually entertaining and sometimes mutually guiding and mutually helpful. And the dream itself might be for the benefit of the community, the family, the community, even a greater collective from time to time. I mean, there are dreamers who dream for the people. This still goes on. I mean, very few people in their right mind want to be the kind of psychic dreamer who brings through information that shows disasters and wars and terrible things that might lie ahead, and then has the burden of trying to decide who to go to with this information. That's not a fun assignment. I tended to dodge that assignment for much of my recent life, and I will say, show me, if you must, show me things in my dreams where I can do some good. Show me things that I can use to do some good, rather than simply show me what lies ahead for the world when my actions might be inappropriate, or imperfect, or impossible. Still, dreaming on a manageable level can do great good for a family, a community, a finite number of people connected with each other who can communicate and share the gift, share the guidance. So there's that as well. And there's joy in all of this. And in crazy times, there is a possibility as you develop a community, maybe a community of two, one friend, one partner, who can share dreams with each other without fear, in an open-hearted way. There is the possibility of creating islands of safety, of coherence, of sanctuary even in the crazy world, where, you know, we can restore and remain connected to deeper values, where we can share wonderful adventures in realms beyond the obvious. I mean, in dreaming, many of us remembered this during the pandemic. In dreaming, you can travel without leaving home. That is one of the gifts of dreaming. In dreaming, once again, you have access to worlds of discovery, initiation, adventure, higher education, which are waiting for you to remember, waiting for you to join them in understanding again more deeply and applying the the purposes for which you came to this world in your life, in this lifetime. It's as big as that, as deep as that. This is the way in which you can find personal answers to those enduring questions. What am I? Where do I come from? What am I meant to be doing in this lifetime? All right, on that modest note, we'll pause for our last break. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back to say dream on.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Well, you've been listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. I hope you enjoyed my effusions about bringing back dreamtime wisdom we need at the time is now. So, as you go forward on your roads of life, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.